Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
I'm Marianne Combs, in for Carrie Miller. For the rest of this hour, the future of the death penalty in the United States. Pope Francis announced earlier this month that he was making a significant revision to the Catholic Catechism. The Church's Book of Moral and Religious Teachings now states that the death penalty is both inadmissible and contrary to the gospel. Previously, the Catechism had stated that execution was called for, but only in extreme circumstances. The Pope's moves reflect global trends. More than two-thirds of all countries have already banned the death penalty. The United States is the only democracy in the West that still executes people sentenced with capital crimes. So, will the Pope's edict affect the politics of American Catholics? Joining me this hour, Griffin Hardy is the communications manager for the Ministry Against the Death Penalty. Thanks for joining us, Griffin.
Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined by Dr. Joseph Capizzi, professor of moral theology at the Catholic University of America. Dr. Capizzi, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
So first to you, Griffin, working as you do for the Ministry Against the Death Penalty, what was your reaction to the Pope's change to the Catechism?
Well, we were very happy. This has been something that has been in the works for quite a while. We were glad to see that Pope Francis closed what was kind of like the last loophole in the Catholic Church's death penalty teaching.
What is so important about recognizing the dignity, and in this case, the, quote, inviolable dignity, unquote, of people who have committed terrible acts?
I think a big piece of it is just being consistent in our moral outlook. The Catholic Church has been very involved in protecting the dignity of innocent lives over the years. And now with this change to the death penalty teaching, there's a clear exception, clear no exceptions about the inviolable dignity of guilty lives as well.
And that's important because?
It's important because there really is no difference between an innocent and a guilty life. They're both lives. They're both human beings. And every life matters, even those who have committed horrible crimes.
He didn't just say that the death penalty was inadmissible. He also said that Catholics should work to end the death penalty worldwide. How do you think American Catholics will respond to this call to action?
I think a lot of it is going to be about what they hear from the pulpit on Sunday and what actions that their diocese, their parishes, their priests help them to organize. One example that we're seeing right now is in Nebraska, where there's an execution scheduled tomorrow. It would be the first execution there in 21 years. And a lot of the Catholic bishops, Catholic churches are very involved in encouraging the governor, who's also Catholic, to not go through with this.
Professor Capizzi, previously the Catechism stated the death penalty was only acceptable, quote, out of absolute necessity in societies that were structurally unable to defend themselves from violent actors, unquote.
Right.
The United States, it could be argued, is quite capable of dealing with violent killers. It has an extensive prison system, justice system. So how have Christian supporters of the death penalty justified its use?
I think actually at this point it's a pretty difficult justification given what the Pope has said. As you pointed out, the teaching that he just presented seems to be directed at places precisely like the United States, right? And we do have the capacity to defend the common good of our country without recourse to death penalty. So justifying it would have to be some sort of prudential judgment, much as I think it's Drew Wright said, that seeks to find some space in whatever loophole may exist, that in the past the teaching has permitted states to use the death penalty. The teaching has recognized that that kind of punishment is not necessarily immoral, but you know, could have some meaning, could have some application. And I think that's what typically politicians and others are doing. They're looking to find the space in that loophole.
What does that say, if that people are actively searching for a loophole around the death penalty?
Well, I'm going to assume good faith here, right? The teaching for the bulk of the Christian tradition is pretty clear that states have this right. They have the right in certain very limited circumstances to execute criminals as kind of an appropriate punishment for some crimes that the criminals have committed. And I think for many Christians, and many Catholics in particular, the current teaching and the current move that we just described seems like too far departure from the tradition itself, and almost in essence to undermine or even strain the tradition and its authoritativeness. So, if we assume good faith here, right, which I think we should, I don't think it's people trying to rationalize something that is simply not rationalizable. Instead, I think they're trying to make sense of how this places itself in the broader tradition.
All right. We're talking this hour about the future of the death penalty in American politics, given the Pope's recent edict that the death penalty is now inadmissible in the Catholic Catechism. I'd love to hear from Christians, and particularly Catholic Christians. How does the Pope's statement on the death penalty affect your politics? Will you vote differently? Do you see this as a mandate for Catholic politicians to work to end the death penalty? Give us a call at 651-227-6000. That's 651-227-6000. Or you can join the conversation at 1-800-242-2828. Outside the Twin Cities, call 1-800-242-2828. Now, in response to the Vatican's announcement, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, a Democrat and a Catholic, said he will pursue the abolition of the death penalty in his state, which is not really surprising, given his father was ardently against the death penalty. In Nebraska, Republican Catholic Governor Pete Ricketts said the change in the catechism would have no impact on the death penalty in his state. And as you noted earlier, Griffin, there's an execution planned for tomorrow. So they're both sticking to their party platforms. This seems to imply that the Pope doesn't have that much power in this debate. Dr. Capizzi?
Yeah, look, I think that's probably right. One of the things we're seeing here is the absence of an effect of Catholic teaching on Republican Democratic politics in the United States, which we've been seeing for some time now, right? The notion of a Catholic bloc that is responsive to Catholic teaching has long been dissolved, right? That we just don't have that any longer. Mm-hmm. But I do think, again, perhaps the governor in Nebraska may be precisely one of those people who's saying, as far as I read what the Pope has said, he has not actually fully closed the loophole. He has not revoked the right of the state to execute criminals in very, very limited circumstances. Instead, he's used this strange term from a theological perspective of inadmissible, right? It's not a sort of typical moral term. Immoral, for instance, would have been a term that would have been more clarifying than inadmissible. This, I think, is being read by some Catholics as a kind of contingent judgment based on the presence of certain conditions, like industrialized penal systems, the capacity to defend the common good. And absent those conditions, or, in judgments where people think those conditions may not actually exist, there may be still a little loophole here.
But he also says it's contrary to the gospel. That seems pretty darn clear.
I know. All I can tell you is that, again, if you're somebody who wants to read as most, I think, theologians do, right, and maybe many Catholics, if not most of them, want to do it, if you want to read these things in the context of the tradition, you try to figure out how did we get from the statement, again, that's centuries old, right, that the state has the right to execute in certain circumstances to this statement now. And it goes to something that I hope it's Drew, right, that Drew said earlier about the dignity of the human person. I don't think the older teaching denied the dignity of the criminal. Instead, I think it sort of essentially either tacitly or explicitly was saying that dignity is not offended by punishment, even the punishment that involves the taking of their life. We seem to have a different judgment at this point, but that might be something where people are, even Catholics, are kind of disagreeing with the Pope.
We're talking this hour about the death penalty in the United States in the wake of the Pope's recent statement, an edict in the Catholic Catechism, saying that the death penalty is inadmissible and contrary to the gospel. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can reach us at 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Let's go to Adam in South Dakota. Adam, welcome to the conversation. What's your question or comment?
Hello. So I love your show, first of all.
Thanks.
And I'm a long time, I'm born and raised a Catholic. I'm from South Louisiana originally. And, you know, pretty strict Catholic household. And to be honest, I've always felt that the death penalty was a necessary part of society, because only reserved for the most extreme crimes. You know, we're talking about the worst of the worst, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because what's the alternative? If a person no longer is any use to society, and then they can't contribute anything at all because of, you know, the crimes that they committed or whatever may have happened, what's the alternative? Life in prison? That's like $40,000 a year per person. We have more people in prison per capita than any other country in the world right now, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
I think that the death penalty is a way to reduce that number. And, I mean, I hate to say it. I know it sounds cruel, but to get rid of people that can't contribute anymore to society.
All right, Adam. That's a good question, a good point. Let's take it to Griffin Hardy. Griffin, what do you say to Adam about the idea of, you know, we shouldn't be paying the burden of harboring people who are no longer contributing to society?
Sure, I think that's a good question. The truth is that the death penalty, because of the many legal costs involved, the added security to have a death row facility, the costs involved in actually carrying out an execution, costs more than a life sentence. It sounds counterintuitive, but that's actually the truth, and that's been confirmed time and time again by economists across the country.
Hmm.
May I add something at this point, too?
Sure. Professor Kinsey?
It is a great question, and I think to Griffin's earlier point, the notion of human dignity that I think most of us would agree with is not one that's based on a person's capacity to contribute to society, right? So even if you favor the death penalty, as, again, the historic tradition has, the judgment wasn't based on the capacity of the criminal to contribute to society, you know, or the notion that they no longer could contribute, right? That from the Catholic perspective, right, this is why we oppose abortion, right? This is not about contributing members. It's about human beings. And the notion that somebody is a human being already involves certain protections and ways that we're going to regard them and treat them. So if you want to justify the death penalty, at least from the Catholic perspective, as Adam does, I don't think you're going to make claims about the criminal's capacity to contribute to society. You're going to have to look somewhere else, like retribution, right, that this is an apt punishment for certain kinds of crimes, which I think is the way Adam began his understanding.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what's interesting is we're talking about prisons and we're talking about the death penalty. And Adam pointed out that we have far more prisoners per capita than most other countries. And that we also have, you know, we also are one of the few Western democracies, or the only Western democracy, that still has the death penalty. Is there a connection there that's more about the United States than it is about, the Catholic Catechism and how it's interpreted? I mean, is this truly American question?
I think it is. I do. I think it is. I think, in fact, what we see in the United States is that we really need to overhaul a lot of our system of punishment. We have a system that is very prone to throwing people into prisons and into sort of playing out the full range of types of punishment. So there's something up here, right? And I think it's something uniquely American. We've not really allowed ourselves to reflect on what we're trying to achieve with our system of punishment, and whether the means that we're currently employing to are actually achieving these things, or in fact countering the goals we're seeking with it.
Yeah. Greg in St. Paul writes, how did the Pope arrive at his decision? Did he take into account what most scholars are thinking about the death penalty not working? And there's actually a long tradition. Some people say he broke with tradition when he made this decision, but other people say he actually is following in the work of the two popes who preceded him. Professor Capizzi, what is sort of the line of change in the Catholic Church on this?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, as Griffin suggested earlier, that the prior two popes clearly thought that capital punishment was a problem and had difficulty articulating a justification for it. That said, they both also, I think, placed their teaching more clearly in the context of the older tradition, recognizing again the right of the state to do this in very limited circumstances, and arguing more or less something like a judgment that, given the absence of those circumstances, contemporary states and states like the United States no longer ought to be employing capital punishment. They don't need it any longer. Now, that left open the possibility of judgments in other places like Mexico, right, or Colombia, where they have grave difficulties with organized crime and the capacity of organized criminals to work from within prisons, right? Perhaps in situations like that, one could argue maybe capital punishment might be permissible there. But I think all the popes have sort of been tightening around the teaching. The prior two, like I said, a little bit more consistent with the older tradition. This latest teaching, a little less clear about its relationship with the older teaching. But I think, as Griffin said, the Pope's indication is rather clear that he wants to tighten it still further.
Griffin, looking at the voters, according to the Pew Research Center, in 2016, support for the death penalty in the United States fell to a four-decade low. But a more recent poll finds that support has started to creep back up. 54% of Americans say they support the death penalty, while 39% oppose it. What do you think is behind this shift?
I think part of it is the political rhetoric that we're seeing in general right now. Kind of a sense of increasing public support for harsh punishments, for kind of just brutalization of the human person. And I think that can seep into other areas, and the death penalty is one of those areas.
We're talking this hour about the death penalty and American politics. We'd love to hear from you. If you are a Christian and you support the death penalty, tell us why. Why do you see the death penalty as a more just punishment than, say, life in prison? We'd also like to hear from those of you who do not support the death penalty in terms of how you reconcile this, your church and your politics and the political candidates that you vote for. You can join the conversation at 651-227-6000. That's 651-227-6000. Or you can call us at 1-800-242-2828. Professor Capizzi, how do you reconcile the fact that the vast majority of executions in the United States take place in states in the so-called Bible Belt, where religion is said to play a greater role in daily life?
Right. I'm not sure. I think there are different ways to try to reconcile that. One would be perhaps a more, crass explanation of, conceptions of retribution and divine justice or something. But I think, another way to look at that would just be to say that these are people who take religion and religious tradition seriously, and the historic tradition of the Christian community has been, again, one that, as I've said over and over, argues that this is permissible in certain circumstances. That
this is the an eye for an eye line from the Bible.
Right, which suggests a proportionality between crime and punishment, right? But mm-hmm. that death is from the Christian perspective, an and maybe even from any perspective with regard to punishment, right? Death is always the framework of punishment, right? That even if you sentence somebody to life in prison, even the language of life suggests that you're working on that person's life, right? It's a denial to that person of the freedoms that we associate with agency and full living. And death is just the extreme of that. And I think it's there throughout Scripture. It's in the background of a lot of this, even theologically, the notion that we're sentenced to death by our sin, right? It's all part of this teaching of broader Christianity. So you can understand people who remain faithful and who read the Scriptures as seeing that, you know, death is kind of built into the way we think about the world. And of course, this life that we have is not the greatest good. It's a penultimate good from the Christian perspective. So to lose it in sacrifice for some greater goods, or to lose it as a criminal because of a crime you've committed, is not necessarily the greatest evil either.
That's an interesting perspective. So going back to Griffin, Griffin Hardy, how do you reconcile, we were talking about earlier that there's an execution plan for tomorrow. There was one also just this past Thursday. 59-year-old Billy Ray Eirich was put to death in Tennessee for the rape and murder of a 7-year-old girl. Why do you think people should ask for mercy for someone like Billy Ray Eirich?
Sure, I'm glad you brought that up. I was actually at the Riverbend Correctional Institution in Tennessee outside with other death penalty abolitionists. And, you know, I think that when we have a case like this where clearly there's a horrific crime, a young girl who lost her life in a horrible way, it really makes the situation difficult, even for those of us who are always against the death penalty. I think it's important to really step back for a minute and really remain aware of the fact that somebody lost their life in that case and in every other case involving the death penalty, and to kind of, you know, recognize that that's really a serious thing. But at the same time, we also have to consider the fact that when we execute somebody, it doesn't change anything. It doesn't bring the victim back to life. It doesn't change the fact that this crime happened oftentimes 20 to 30 years ago. And in the meantime, we've left this victim's family in this sense where they're waiting and waiting and waiting for this execution to occur. And they've been told that this is justice for them. This will finally make them feel whole. And I can't speak for all victims' families, but of the many that I've talked to, most of them don't feel that way after an execution occurs. Most of them realize that this really hasn't done anything for them. And in some cases, it actually makes things worse.
We're talking this hour about the death penalty. Let's go to Johanna in Woodbury. She's on the line. Johanna, thanks for joining the conversation.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure.
This is a little bit of a shift from what was just being said, but I heard some comments about Scripture earlier, and I just wanted to interject with I grew up Catholic, and seems to me two points that one in Matthew in the New Testament it says that thou shalt not judge or something along those lines. So. And like he who casts the first stone or something, but we're not meant to judge those around us, and that's up to God to do the judging. So to me, that's like not our job, and we don't get to sentence anybody else to death. And then also, we're not supposed to kill. Thou shalt not kill is in the Bible. So why is it that we think that we have the right to sentence anyone to death? If we're really Christian.
Johanna, that's a great question. Thanks so much. Professor Capizzi, yeah, there seems to be a disconnect between what human behavior and what we're supposed to do and then the role of the state and what it's allowed to do. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Of course, it's a great question, and she put it very well by connecting it to certain canonical scriptures, right? So with regard to judgment, first, Yes, we're not supposed to judge, and I guess the question would be, what does that scripture mean? Does it mean that we're not supposed to make judgments among innocence and guilt, judgments with regard to certain kinds of acts that people committed, and so on? And obviously, again, the Christian tradition has said no, it doesn't mean that, right? Because if it did mean that, we would shut down all systems of in law enforcement and punishment, because they all involve judgments, right? And again, judging somebody and convicting them and sentencing them to life imprisonment is a great, right? It's a great harm, arguably even inhumane, as many states in Europe have suggested. So we do seem to be licensed by God to judge under His judgment, and so that that's an important thing for us to consider. The second is, thou shalt not kill. And this is where things get very interesting in the tradition. The Catholic tradition and many other Christian communities have said really what that's prohibiting is murder, right, or the intentional killing of innocent people. And that, of course, is something we should never violate. However, if we judge somebody to be guilty, as we just described, and this judgment is done by political authority, the state, the Christian community has recognized, has the right in some circumstances to kill those people. And two of those circumstances are, of course, historically capital punishment, and second, war. So one of the things that's very interesting about this teaching on capital punishment is whether, though it's not said, in essence, it actually undermines the Catholic position, not merely on punishment, but also on war, where the killing seems to be intentional killing of people who are judged to be in the wrong. And if you think that all intentional killing is now impermissible, then we're going to have a very difficult time as Catholics to justify the killing that is in war. And as we all know, Catholics serve in our armed services, as much as anybody else does. And in fact, probably even more than any other religious community.
So would that be a bad thing for Catholics to take up an issue with war and to suddenly start questioning the value of war?
Well, it would be I don't know if a bad thing is the right thing to say, but it would certainly be a departure from the tradition again, and it would be something else. It would be very significant if the Pope were pushing all of this towards that kind of blanket prohibition of killing, even the kinds of killing associated with killing in war. It could be a bad thing, of course, if you think that protecting the common good, defending people against injustice that's being brought against you, much as, for instance, happened in Kuwait or happened in a couple of the other wars that we were involved in the 20th century, right? If you think that those defenses were necessary and good, then you're going to think that this movement is a bad one.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got time for one more caller. Let's go to David in St. Paul. David, welcome to the conversation.
Hi. When we've been talking about religion and its influence on people's view on the death penalty, mm-hmm. it occurs to me that 50 decades ago, movies and other forms of popular culture didn't have as much of a influence on our lives. And now the mythologies of Star Wars, The Matrix, all of these with their messiah-like characters condoning violence and just killing the bad guys and everything, I would think about the impact that popular mainstream culture and the trivialization of death in mainstream media would have.
Okay.
On.
Thanks for your comment. I appreciate that. Professor Capizzi, sure, there's violence in media that's contributed to our opinions and our outlook. But again, we stand out as unique in Western countries and democracies. All of Europe has banned the death penalty. What is it about us that makes us different? Besides tradition. I know we've talked a lot about tradition and how much we love tradition, but...
Well, it's hard to get away from the fact that we are a more religious country, or remain a more religious country than much of Western Europe does, right? How much that contributes to this is not clear to me, but it certainly does. The U.S. also has a very very peculiar relationship with guns and the settling of scores by violence. It's something that is built into a lot of our, to go to this caller's comments, built into a lot of our media, our culture, our stories, the legends. As a kid, I grew up like anybody else in a way, glamorizing Billy the Kid and people like that, right? There's a lot of violence that's sort of written into the American story. The caller might be right to suggest that there's something about that that relates to the way we handle punishment and even punishment leading to death.
Griffin Hardy, what do we know about the value? I mean, does the death penalty deter crime? The idea that somebody dies for a heinous crime, does that deter other people from committing that crime?
No, it does not. Statistics over several decades actually show that the violent crime rate is higher in states that execute people than in states that don't. And that cannot be accounted for by some idea that there just must be more violent crime in that state, so more people are executed. That just doesn't actually correlate. And even just on a more logical level, I think we have to think about the nature of violent crimes, especially murders. Most people who commit a violent crime don't stop and think about the consequences before doing so. And a lot of times it involves other factors.
It's a crime of passion.
Exactly. And it might even be somebody who is mentally ill or intellectually disabled or very young, who may not even be able to fully understand the potential consequences.
Right. Although we have, in that case, that we have outlawed the death penalty for those instances. I'm afraid we have to wrap up the hour. One last comment, though, from Jack in Fargo. He writes, as someone who has spent 5 years in prison, if I was looking for justice, I would rather someone be locked up for life than be killed. That's from Jack. Thanks for listening this hour. We've been talking about the death penalty in the United States. My guests, Dr. Joseph Capizzi, professor of moral theology at the Catholic University of America, and Griffin Hardy, communications manager for the Ministry Against the Death Penalty. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.